Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Lovely to be back with you here on Private Club Radio, episode number 102. Today we're talking to a number of awesome folks that I met at the Club Leadership Summit in Belfast, Northern Ireland. It was a wonderful conference put on by Club Incorporated. Neil Flanagan and Doug Green, partners at Club Incorporated, put that conference on and just did a spectacular job. And they set me up with some amazing folks to interview all week long. And I'm going to be bringing you some of those today on this episode. And we will definitely have a part two next week talking to some more folks from the Club Leadership Summit. But on this episode, we are going to chat with Andy O'Sullivan of the Tottenham Hotspurs, because that was one of the most intriguing presentations I heard during the Leadership Summit. Andy and the Hotspurs are doing some incredible things for fan engagement, the fan experience. And I think there's a lot of ways that that can translate into the private club realm. And so I wanted to bring you Andy. We're also going to chat with Leanne Rice. Leanne is the golf marketing manager for Tourism Northern Ireland. And we're going to talk about some of the fantastic golf properties that Northern Ireland has to offer, including Royal Portrush, which will be the site of the 2018 Open Championship. So that's a pretty fun conversation there. She has a lovely accent, which you will enjoy listening to. And lastly, on this episode, we're going to speak with Neil Hampton of Royal Dornoch. And Neil has a great story about this club with a ton of history that I think you're really going to enjoy. So that will be this week's episode, and we've got lots more to bring you into next week and probably the week after even. Before we bring on our first interview, I just want to give you one little heads up that I finally, after talking about it for a couple of months, have gotten the online education up, the new online education about artificial intelligence and how that's going to affect searches online. And you may think that it's not going to affect you, but I guarantee you it's going to have a huge effect on your club. You got to learn more about that, and you can do that at aloisi.com/search, aluisy.com/search, a new course that I've got up. It's $10 to take it, and it will be worth every single penny. I will give you a money back guarantee, because the information in there is going to be valuable. If you want to be found online as a club, if you want people to know you exist, you had better pay attention to what I'm talking about in that webinar, because the world's changing fast. And either you are going to hop on the artificial intelligence bandwagon, or you're literally going to be left behind. I truly believe that. aloisi.com/search. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring on our first guest from the Club Leadership Summit, Mr. Andy O'Sullivan, who is the hospitality manager for Tottenham Hotspurs. Here's Andy.
It's Andy. Welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Just really enjoyed your talk here at the Club Leadership Summit, and you really talked about the fan experience, the customer experience. And I'd love for you to just give some highlights of this new incredible stadium and things that you're doing there at Tottenham.
I guess for us, the first part was all about locality. Where are we? We're in Tottenham. We're a suburb of Tottenham. Tottenham's probably the most undeveloped area of London, if we're brutally honest. And the kind of the local youth, if you like, are into their fried chicken. So we're trying to do a healthy version of fried chicken.
And it's that's a very thing, really, in London.
Yeah. In that part of North London, yes.
Interesting.
And we're a big market for craft beers. So we've built our own microbrewery into the stadium. So we'll brew our own beer. And we'll let our fans taste the beer, and they'll decide which beer they want us to brew for them.
So it's
really about locality. We'll work with local companies to source local produce. You know, we're the largest employer in the Tottenham area, and therefore we want to employ locals. I mean, perfect sense to push back and really help local businesses and local people thrive in the workplace. So So that was kind of where it started from. And then we kind of, and that was all born out of, that's what our customers asked us for. They said, what are we doing to develop local businesses and create local employment? So
wow.
You kind of saw that we've created 1,700 jobs. We think it's probably closer to 5,000 by the time we open this stadium. And we're putting $293 million back into the local economy, so it's annually.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's a pretty important project.
Yeah.
But with the customer and our local residents at the heart of all the decisions we make as a business.
Yeah. Anytime you're undergoing a huge project, clubs do it in terms of maybe they're renovating the clubhouse, but you're on a much grander scale, obviously, but I think some of the lessons still make sense. You're building a new stadium. What were some of the things you did to really build the buzz with your fans and to get them anticipating what's going to come next year for them?
Gabe, it's not hard. Ask them. Ask them what they want. And, you know, the world today, we're all busy, we're all running around, we're all trying to get things done as quickly as we can. But sometimes, you know what, take a step back, slow down, and think about what it is your fans want and ask them. Because if you just don't know, and that's okay not to know, but it's not okay not to know and not to ask them.
Right.
So you know, that's the golden rule. And we ask them, and you know what, they come up a list of 10 things. We might fix 7 of them for them and be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We might not be able to do all 10, but they'll forgive us the 3 we can't do because we've heard them and listened to them on the 7 we can do.
Sure.
So,
well, what are a few of the things that you were doing? I mean, I know you did like a virtual reality kind of tour. People could tour the new stadium with these VR goggles and things. And talk about some of the other promotions you had behind, build up to this.
I'll touch on the VR first, but... So we had a 118-year-old stadium. In the UK, we tend to build every 100 years. yeah. So we're not particularly good at building every 30 years, which the US market is used to.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, so all we had was 118 years of history, which is a great history to have. But we couldn't actually explain what we were trying to build as we were heading forward, because if all you knew was what we had, how do you visualize what we're bringing? And, you know, we'd taken our research, we'd understood the products that the customers wanted, and then how do you showcase that? Because, you know, we wasn't settling for the best London venue. We wanted to be the best venue in the world. So, you know, that's a much bigger ask. And we want our fans to be proud of what we're building for them, but also to embrace it. So, so the point of VR was really we took a gaming technology and literally immersed them into the stadium. So they sat in a dome and we had a fly-through video which talked about London as a destination and Tottenham as a new, unique, iconic venue for London. Also the home for NFL. You know, we got a 10-year contract with 2 games. So straight away we're reaching out to a new market as well.
Right.
And actually, you know, if you just don't understand the rules of NFL, how do you bring that to life? Well, we've got to talk to people about it and help them understand that there's a new game in town. So that was one of the things we had to do as well. So the virtual reality really enabled us to do that.
Wow.
And then, you know, instead of using kind of old school stadium models, we used augmented tables where you literally hold an iPad over an architect's imprint of the landscape and the stadium pops out and you can flick the roof off and you can go through levels of building.
That's so cool.
And people got excited by it because, you know, we're a generation that's really into our gadgets and our phones and our iPads. And that's not an age thing anymore. There's a younger millennial swing that's bringing that through. But actually, we're all gripping it.
That's
all getting hold of that now. You know, even at the very top end of our client base, when we surveyed them, they said, please don't send us anything in the post. Please talk to us electronically. So every generation now wants electronic communication. So we decided, well, okay, well, let's make it the most technologically advanced stadium in the world and allow everyone to talk to the outside world when they're at our game.
Right. Yeah, you put in a big Wi-Fi thing and whatnot. But what I love about that is like what you're doing there is you're activating your own fans to then become brand champions for the Spurs.
Correct.
That then increases your reach into other markets you may not have existed in. So I love what you're doing there. The other thing I got a kick out of is let's talk about what you do for the away fans. At this new stadium, you're going to do some pretty cool things for the away fans, some of those hooligans that come into Tottenham, right?
Well, you'd like to think the days of hooligan are gone out of football now. I think 30 years ago, there was definitely a problem.
Yeah.
I think there's a very small minority now that still misbehave a little, but away fans just think that when they're away from their stadium, it's a day out, it's a bit of a road trip for them. So suddenly they start to behave differently. And what we've tried to do is, when they come to our stadium, rather than do exclusive pouring rights deals with people that we might want to work with, if we do a non-exclusive basis, using our microbrewery again, we can brew any beer in the world. Mm-hmm. So I actually been able to say to that club, you know, what's the local beer in your area, and actually brew that and serve it in the away areas. And look, we won't do it for every group of supporters, but for some, it makes sense to do that. Right. Also, just sourcing local food produce from their area or cooking meals that they're used to receiving when they're the home team at their venue, and simple things like putting our catering staff in away team polos. It just makes it feel like their space. And if you use, you know, digital screens rather than paint and paper, digital screens allow you to put that team's colours up in the away area.
Right.
And it feels like home from home for them. And that suddenly changes the behavior.
Yeah.
They want to be there. They feel very welcomed. And it's the little things that really go the longest journey.
That'll keep them coming back.
Yeah.
Totally. And not trashing your stadium, which I guess is a problem in the Premier League, right?
It can be. Yeah. It can be. It's not every scene, but there are one or two sets of away fans that don't... Or are less respectful, shall we say, of the property than we would like. But sometimes that's about... Make them feel at home. Make them feel like it's their home, and suddenly they'll behave differently.
Right. And you said it so quickly. I just want to make sure, because the piece that I really loved about this is you say that the staff actually wear the shirts and the colors of the away team. So like the person that's maybe pouring the drinks or doing the concessions, they're actually wearing the away team's colors and emblems. And that's, to me, just really cool, because you're thinking, again, in terms of it's not just serving one fan base, but how do you really make Tottenham a brand that everybody can attach themselves to, because you do these cool things.
Yeah, well, and also, but we're happy to align ourselves with their brand, with their club.
Right, yeah.
How that transfers to golf clubs, I don't know, but maybe if you've got societies that come to your golf club.
Sure.
And actually, is there a society package where you're selling the society not just a food and beverage package and 18 holes of golf,
right,
but actually a trick shot competition that you put on for them? And do they all have matching polos? And do you have a pro that works with them for the day?
Right.
And the pro wears that polo. So they feel connected. So there is some transferability.
Sure, certainly.
I'm not sure every club would want to do it, but there is definitely some transferability.
Certainly.
You know, and get those people saying, do you know what? We really enjoyed that club. Let's go back there.
The other thing I could think of is, let's say you're going to have a prospective member come to your club, maybe just a couple, right? But ask them, what do you like to eat? What types of things, you know, do you enjoy? And actually maybe have the chef do a special meal for them. I think that's where some of those ideas can translate. But just thinking about the guest that's coming through and how you can make them feel at home.
What's your event about? How many people are coming? How often do you do this?
Yeah.
Understanding the basics of why somebody's coming to your club will arguably tell you how to service their needs and get them coming back time and time again. And that's what we're all in the game for.
Yeah, brilliant. And the last thing I wanted to cover, make sure we covered, is you talked about, you know, happy customers spend more money, right?
Yeah.
And so everything you build isn't necessarily profit driven, because it's just increasing the experience. So can you speak a little bit to that and what you've done at Tottenham?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a bit of a corny phrase to say happy customers spend more money, but it's very, very true. Good customer service is selling someone something that they need and want and have a use for. You know, selling them something that is not practical or is not right for them buys you tomorrow's cancellations.
Right.
Because those people don't come back.
Sure.
Right. Because they feel like they've been let down by, if you overpromise and underdeliver. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's about stripping back some of the package offering and saying, look, you know, there's a basic entry level. And by the way, there are a number of opportunities to diversify your match day with us. And therefore, when you're coming back, you don't have to come back and do the same thing every time you come back.
Right.
You know, it gives you that flexibility, as you would if you were being compared to on the high street. And you know what, all of us will spend a little bit more money for a better day out. We've got no problem doing that,
right?
And I think the point I was trying to make was the bit about taking cost away from experience leaves you with value for money.
Mm-hmm.
And if the value's there, the cost and experience are irrelevant. The people look at the value.
Yeah, so well, Saudi Andy, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for being here at the Club Leadership Summit.
Thank you.
See, I told you were going to enjoy that one. Awesome stuff from Andy right there. Next up, let's talk to Leanne Rice. She is the Director of Golf Marketing for Tourism Northern Ireland. Here was my chat with Leanne.
Leanne, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thanks, Gabe.
Yeah. Very cool for you to join us here at put on the summit here in your beautiful city of Belfast. For folks who've never visited Belfast, what would you say about the city?
I think Belfast is in an era of very exciting times. We've had very positive results in the last few years in terms of tourism and economic development. So we're very fortunate, and we're at the fantastic Titanic Belfast, so the world's number one tourist attraction.
Yeah, it is. And even in your ads and in your promotion of Northern Ireland tourism, you talk about it's really an exciting time for golf in Northern Ireland right now. So can you tell folks what's happening in Northern Ireland in terms of golf?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose we're quite lucky. We've got some fantastic world-class courses and trophy courses. We've hosted the Irish Open 3 times in the last 5 years, and we're also going to be hosting the Open in 2019 in Royal Portrush. So it's the first time that the Open has come back to Northern Ireland in 68 years.
Wow.
So it's going to be a big event. Yeah. And we're very, very fortunate to have it coming here.
Yeah, what sort of things do you have to do to prepare for this influx of people who will be visiting? And
oh my goodness, there's been a lot of plans on the ground the last several years, and we've got a lot of plans, a lot of things happening in the next 19 months. So we're working with the local authorities and police service in Northern Ireland, fire and rescue, the local transport authorities, working with the RNA and throughout our whole team in tourism Northern Ireland. So there's a lot of things happening across the country. But yeah, we're nearly there.
I bet. So you've got some interesting excursions just around Northern Ireland. So when people come and play golf there, they can do so much more. And I know Game of Thrones is actually filmed around here. And tell us a little bit about those tours and things that are happening for folks.
Sure. So Game of Thrones, I suppose, has been a phenomenal success for us. It's been filmed in Northern Ireland in several locations. There actually are 26 locations in Northern Ireland that it's filmed in. So we have a lot of visitors coming in from all over the world to do the bus tours that will take you to a lot of the key points where they're filmed, like Dunluce Castle. And yeah, we're very lucky to have Game of Thrones here, and it's a phenomenal success. So it's a great experience to get in the bus and see the locations that the Game of Thrones show has been filmed, and to reenact that and put on the costumes, yeah. Go to the Game of Thrones food tours. It is great, and it's, if you're a fan, you know, it's definitely a must do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's so important for a private club or any golf club, golf property, to really tap into the local scene, and you've done that. You do that really well here in Northern Ireland. You have any advice for folks in terms of how do you put together the right type of environment for that to happen?
Well, we have so much to offer across the country. It depends where you are based. Like if you're based in Belfast, for example, we have, you know, Belfast is about an hour's drive from all of our big links courses. And we also have fantastic parkland course here as well. But, you know, we're well known for our hospitality and for our crack. And I suppose the 19th hole is definitely something to look forward to, because there's always a nice pint of Guinness or whatever you wish at the 19th
sure.
hole.
Right.
So we've got lots of, you know, fantastic bars and restaurants, you know, throughout, and our hospitality is great, and it's, you know, world famous.
Yeah.
I'm very proud to say that.
That's great. It'd be interesting for you guys to just be on the world stage here. All eyes are going to be on you. Is it nerve-wracking?
I suppose it is. Yes, it is nerve-wracking. However, we're welcome to have the Open here, and we hosted the World Police and Fire Games a few years ago, and we had the Giro d'Italia. So we are known for hosting these fantastic world-class events. So, but this is the biggest golf event, which is exciting. But we're ready for it, and we're very excited to have it here.
That's fantastic. Leanne, thanks so much for joining me on Private Club Radio.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know about you, but I am sold to the man in the blue sweater. That's me today, wearing blue sweater. All right, next up is a gentleman that I really enjoyed interviewing and learning about his club. It is a spectacular sounding place, and if I ever get up to the Scottish Highlands, I am absolutely going to sneak onto this one or ask Neil if I can play. Neil Hampton of Royal Dornoch. Here's the interview.
400 years of golf on your links. Tell us about the history.
Yeah, that's right, Gabe. Last year, 2016, we celebrated 400 years of golf being played on the links. The club itself was only formed in 1877.
Only 1877.
So 140 years or so of the club. But the earliest recording of golf was in 1616, when the Earl of Sutherland was getting tutored by Sir Robert Gordon. And in Sir Robert Gordon's expenses, he claimed for bows and arrows, golf clubs and golf balls for tutoring the Earl of Sutherland. So we know that golf was played then, and by dint of that expense sheet, it was probably before then, but we haven't been able to find any recording of that. We, in the lead up to our 2016 400-year celebrations, we sponsored a PhD student to do research into the history of wow. golf and sports in the Highland area. So he concentrated on the 1600, 1800 era. So found a lot of great stuff about golf, how golf was played, how golf was a big industry then. People making their living out of producing golf clubs, really? Producing golf balls, looking after the links, doing all that back in the 1650s.
That's amazing.
1680s, yeah. Yeah. So that was an industry. So, I mean, I know your dad was a pro, and there was people who were professionals, not professional golfers, but professional in the game of golf
right.
back then. So wow. that was tremendous. So, yeah. So we reckon we were about the third oldest.
That's incredible.
Golfing destination, golfing area in, wow. in the world.
So tell us a little bit about preserving the history and the tradition, yeah. you know, along with times are changing, technology, and how do you stay true to your brand, to yourselves there?
Well, yeah, I mean, last year we had a lot of parties, a lot of big stuff, because it wasn't one particular date that it was started.
Right.
We thought, well, we can't just pick one day and say that's what we're going to do.
like they did for Christmas.
So yeah, so we decided, right, let's just do lots of different things throughout the year. And because it wasn't a celebration of the golf club, it was more of the town, we decided, right, we've got to do things for the town, we've got things for the clubs, we're a royal club, so we invited royal people, we had celebrities come in, we had professional golfers, we had lots of different things throughout the year at the golf club and the town. And so because of that, we got lots of really nice gifts. People, when they were invited to come, brought us a little present to say congratulations on 400.
Wow.
So we put a little display of that on, and we got a couple of ladies in the club who helped put the display up, and it made us realise that we hadn't actually recorded properly all the stuff we'd had accumulated over that 140 years of golf club and the stuff that we'd been given before that. So these two ladies are very interested in it. We've bought museum-grade software. We're working to museum standards, and they're archiving, recording, listing, numbering every single piece we have. So that next year, if we want to do another exhibition, so for example, Donald Ross is a big part of our history because he was born in Dornoch, went to the States. And
really?
You may have heard of him.
Of course.
he did a couple of things in the States.
Just a couple.
So next year, we want to have a Donald Ross exhibition. And now the ladies have listed everything. When we want to get some Donald Ross exhibits out, they just go through the software and say, all right, we need that, and it's in that box, and this box here, and on that shelf, so we can put it all together.
Proper archive.
Yeah. And as any golf club like ours and many around the world, we get given lots of things as the years go by. People write books, people give you paintings, people give you a little artifact. We've got to record all that. So going mm-hmm. forward, that's going to help us. And in the next 5-10 years is going to be busy for us anyway. We're looking to build a new clubhouse. We want to put in a proper driving range. We want to maybe build a dorming house. We want to do all that. The club is doing well, so we're putting money in the bank. Mm-hmm. So a new clubhouse has been on the agenda for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, we know that the history is going to be big, so that the shape and look of the building is going to be important, but what's inside it even more so. So that now these ladies have done this fantastic job, we're going to have a museum room, a proper archive storage, air conditioned, temperature controlled, everything, so wow. that we are preserving it. So yeah. that when I retire and you retire, and the next generation has all this to look forward to, mm-hmm. because they'll be able to use it, look after it,
wow.
take it out and put it back in, do everything properly,
right.
because we put this in place. And it's turning into, what we didn't realize at the time was a little project for these two ladies. It's turning into a very, very big task, but a very, very important task. And we're all realizing now that we didn't know we had so much stuff, so much important stuff, mm-hmm. so many fantastic things that said a lot about the history of the golf club and golf, that, you know, this really is a very important thing for us to carry on.
That's right. Yeah, that's an incredible task that you're undertaking. Why to you is it so important to preserve the history?
Well, I think we're... In Scotland, we're lucky. We are the home of golf. We invented the game. We've taken it around the world. And I think maybe in the 80s and 90s, I lost sight of that, you know, that we started it and we should look after it.
Yeah.
A lot of people come to us to play because of Donald Ross. Now, that's history. That's you know, they want to see where he learned his craft, you mm-hmm. know. So that's giving us a bit more thought. Well, you know, we are important. So when people come, not just for that, let's show them a bit more about what happened here, right. how the Lynx land was shaped, how the club was formed, how things went together. And, you know, and it's nice that we know it, and I love talking about it, but let's let other people into that secret and right. let them know what it is. Right. And they have a bit more ownership of Dornoch. They have a bit more ownership of the game of golf. And hopefully from that passion, we can create more golfers mm-hmm. and spread. And I think, well, your dad's in the game. My dad was a pro. And we feel, you know, attached to golf because of that.
Sure.
But we need to share it. And by having these physical things to share, that's going to help people take more ownership, have more fun with it.
Right. Yeah. That's fantastic. You guys actually are ranked, you're fifth in the world.
According to Golf Digest, our favorite golf magazine.
Wow, we are top five. Fifth. That's amazing, yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with the course, what are some of the highlights or the features that they would look forward to?
Yeah, we're a Lynx course, obviously. One of our predominant Lynx features is that you can see the sea from every shot you play. Wow. You get things like Countdown, number one in the world, don't see the sea very often. In fact, hardly at all. But that one of our big features is that you see the sea from every shot you play, and the views are stunning. When you do come and you sit in the clubhouse and you just look out the window, it's quite amazing. And I love it because every day is a new view, mm-hmm. whether the sun is shining or the rain's falling or the snow is on the ground, it's still a stunning view. Wow. So that's one of the things, the views there. But it's a typical Lynx course, straight out, straight back. The feature for us, and something you'll recognize from playing Donald Ross courses, is that the greens are slightly raised, mm-hmm. little plateaus, big runoffs on the side, deep pot bunkers, so that the skill is not getting to the green, it's getting on the green and working with the green. So we're not a particularly long course, 6,700 yards.
You've got to be a shot maker.
Yeah. You've got to understand how to control the ball, how to bounce it short, how to run it on, when not to take the flag on, you know, which side to miss the green on if you're going to try and miss it, you know, and all these little things. It's adding that thing. I say, like Donald Ross, Pinehurst number two, a good example of what Dornoch is. You know, that some of the greens he has there, you know, what's a height, what's a runoff, and what's a skill to be had.
Yeah.
So again, Pinehurst number two isn't that long compared to modern day courses. I mean, I know they stretch it for the Open.
Yeah.
But if you play off the forward tees, the fun is round the green.
Sure.
And that's what we've done. And we've kind of recognized that now. And we've put another set of forward tees in so that you can play at 5,300 yards now. So again, if your game isn't about distance, you can still have the same fun everybody else is.
Right.
Because you get to the green at the same time as us. And have a lot of fun with it.
That's fantastic. What is overall your view of where golf in Scotland is going? And are you bullish on things in terms of golf clubs there? Or?
It's a great question, Gabe. But the game is changing, you know, and some clubs are closing, and we know there's a few more going to close before it settles down. I mean, we've got over 600 clubs and courses, which for a population of 5 million for a small area of land that we have is probably too many. You know, and any industry, things have to regress a little bit before you get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we're all fighting hard to keep them going, we know it's going to change. But that has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, if we look back after the turn of the century, 1900, a lot of courses then closed down.
Sure.
You know, and there's a great book about the lost golf courses, and there's 60 or 70 or 80 in Scotland lost golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a few more will go. But am I bullish? Yeah. I still think the stuff we've seen at this conference this weekend is that the game is strong. Club membership, maybe not as strong, but people playing the game is definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to change the model to give them something different, mm-hmm. to attract them in. Maybe they're not going to be members, but they're still going to be players.
Right.
So I'm very positive about the game itself. Am I positive about club memberships? Well, mm-hmm. you know, that might be a different animal.
Okay.
But again, we have to change our idea.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the great thing about Scotland is 95, 96, 97% of the courses we have, you can walk up, pay a greens fee, and play. So there is that income generation.
I know
in the US it's a slightly different model.
Sure.
And that may be where there's problems going forward, you know.
Right, right.
So we're keen to keep that and keep it going.
Do you think that, you know, these traditional courses in Scotland are just going to remain golf? Do you think you'll start adding some of the facilities we might see in the US, like pools and fitness, or is that not going to work in Scotland?
I don't think we'll be adding those things, but we will be changing the game and the form the game is played in, whether it's a nine-hole course, a putting course, you know, are you going to play a par three course, you know, are you going to have a top golf type driving range? I think it's a breadth of facilities, golf-related.
Okay. Golf-centric, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Oh, come on. Yeah. I think that's what we have to do to get the younger kids in.
Right.
Everybody's time precious. So
sure.
Is it half an hour you've got? Is it an hour? I mean, I love a game of golf, but 4 hours is a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore we put in a halfway house now so people can have a beer halfway.
Check their emails.
Yeah, sort of thing. So yeah, it's the breadth of golf-related facilities I think will grow and people realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, this concept of foot golf, you know, with a soccer ball.
Soccer ball,
that's gone nuts in the UK.
Right.
I mean, I don't think we have enough space or enough population for us to put on that niche market,
but
it's certainly a consideration of what else can we do.
Right.
So pools, fitness rooms, probably not.
Sure.
More golf stuff, definitely.
Very cool. Well, it's fantastic to talk to someone from the home of golf, and we appreciate all the contributions your people have put into the game. Thanks for joining me here at Club Leadership Summit, Neil.
My pleasure, Gabe. Yep. Thank you.
Now you know why that one is on my new bucket list. Just sounds fantastic, and Neil is such a nice guy. So that's going to do it for this edition of Private Club Radio, live from the Club Leadership Summit. To learn more about Club Incorporated, visit clubincorporated.com. They put on a fantastic show. And as I mentioned up front in this episode, we've got about a dozen interviews to bring you. So a few more weeks of learning from the Club Leadership Summit to come. So I'll catch you back here next Monday. And until then, Here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.